The time will come. The time will come, the poet writes. And for some of you, the time has come when you greet yourself in your own mirror and you love again the stranger who was yourself. I see some of you drinking in the sensation of these words, nodding, knowing exactly what the poet meant. And then there are others who look a little puzzled, not exactly sure what the poet is talking about. In this picture, there is a person standing in front of a mirror, and then there's a person looking out from the mirror. Each one of us has these two selves. The self that is, for lack of better word, constructed, the one we often call ego. Then there is the self that has always been there, and we have many names for this self. We call it soul, inner self, true self, divine self. Now we need this one over here, the constructed self with its grand ego, because it helps us move through the world. It helps us to function as a responsible human being in our society. There are those who know only this self, the one who stands in front of the mirror. And then there are those who have caught little glimpses of the person who looks out from the mirror, and they get curious, and they want to know more. They want to know the self beyond all the levels of persona, behind all of the masks, and underneath layers and layers of exhausting pretense. These are folks who are setting out on a spiritual journey in search of a deeper, more authentic way of living and following a way that follows the voice of the true self. And I imagine that most of you are going to fall into that category. Otherwise, you'd be somewhere else on this wonderful Sunday morning. The path of a spiritual life or a spiritual journey is not a straight line, right? It's not a straight line onward and upward. The path of a spiritual journey is circular. Actually, it's a spiral. And that's why I pulled it out here. That's why the spiral is such an important and meaningful symbol for us, a community of seekers. A spiral moves in two ways. First, it moves around. And second, it moves out. It moves and grows out, expanding just as we expand, hopefully, as we continue on our spiritual path, expand our heart's capacity to grow our soul, to include more people and more ideas into our realm. One classic spiritual thinker once said that a spiritual journey always begins elitist and always ends egalitarian. It always begins elitist and it always ends egalitarian. Following our spiritual path, we walk in circles. It feels like that sometimes, doesn't it? And we come back to the beginning. But because the path is not a circle, but it's a spiral, the beginning is actually a new place. And so we find really surprising things there, like a mirror or a stranger who is yourself, who has loved you all your life, who knows you by heart. The time will come. The time will come. But first we have to do a little bit of work to prepare us for that journey. This morning I'm relying heavily on the work of Father Richard Rohr, R-O-H-R. He's a progressive Franciscan priest who has written lots of wonderful books on this topic. He also writes extensively about male spirituality and men's liberation. And he wrote the book that I'm using today. It's called Falling Upward. Falling Upward. In Falling Upward, he describes the spiritual work that must be done in these two different halves of life. Now, as I said earlier, when I say first half of life and second half of life, I'm not trying to delineate time. There are no prescribed years attached to first half or second half. We've all met young people, right, who seem wise beyond their years, spiritually mature. We say they have old souls. And then on the other end, we have met people who are well into their elder years, who are still struggling to do the first half work. They tend to be anxious and angry and fearful. They're holding on tightly to something that served them very well in the early years, but now actually is a hindrance and keeps them from growing up, keeps them from growing out. The kinds of questions that we ask in the first half include questions like, what makes me me? What makes me significant? How can I support myself? Who's going to be with me in my years? What makes me feel safe? In the first half, we build up our sense of who we are as autonomous beings. We strengthen our identity with regard to gender and sexuality. And we learn a lot about ourselves in the way we relate to other people. In that first half, we have a strong need to feel special and unique and successful. It's all about outer performance. And in this way, we're kind of needy in the first half. We need other people to affirm our gifts and our talents. We need people to acknowledge us, pay attention to us, tell us that the sermon was really good today. We tend to be a little preoccupied with looking good to others. And so when we're doing that first half work, we spend a lot of energy creating and defending boundaries. This is who I am. That's who you are. This is what I stand for. That's what you stand for. A lot of distinctions between different groups of people. And also in that first half life, we make up lots of rules, both spoken and unspoken, to protect ourselves and to maintain a sense of order and consistency. It helps us to feel safe, once again, and help us to differentiate between friends and enemies. But you know, not all of those enemies are literally outsiders. A lot of those enemies end up being people who live inside us. Internal demons, our own shadows. What are the things you don't want to talk about? What are the things you don't want to think about? The work of the first half is vitally important, and it's completely appropriate for the earlier years of life. Because if we don't do a good job in those earlier years, you know, in that first half work, then we will not be strong enough to move into the second half of life. And then when we get to the end of our years, we may find ourselves having lived only a half life. So you spend 20, 30, 40, 50 years building up this life. Mostly it's a material world full of careers and social status, family, grown-up toys. And your constant companion here in these years is the voice of ego. And that voice is the one that's been in your head for all those decades. And so it's hard to believe that there could be another voice, because this one's really good. It tells you that you're beautiful and wonderful. Sometimes it tells you you're stupid and you're a loser. Whatever it's saying it loudly, and you believe everything it says. But then you come to realize that maybe there is something truer than that voice. Another moon, another way of looking at the moon. And so you start to move into the second half. And the work in the second half is for you to meet that other you, to greet yourself arriving at the door in your own mirror. All your life, you have ignored this one for another, but now the time has come. The time has come. Those who are living in the second half of life are radically inclusive and incredibly compassionate. They forgive easily and often. They are tired of holding on to old grudges and old hurts, and they won't do it anymore. They don't react as much as respond. When something or someone pushes their buttons or gets on their nerves, there's no knee-jerk reaction. Rather, there is a whole range of responses that they can choose from, and they choose the right response for the given situation. Life in the second half is more spacious, and so there's a lot of freedom to explore new ideas, to break open long-held beliefs, and move beyond the boundaries of their own groups. People in the second half often say, "I don't know. I just don't know." They don't dig in and hold tightly to their opinions anymore. They allow themselves to be changed and persuaded. No longer bound and restricted by old rules, they look for new things that bring people together. They look for commonality. They look for connections. And since they already have a really strong sense of self, they don't have to rely on other people to define them. It's like the woman in the great old poem who warns her friends that she will wear purple when she gets old. She will wear purple when she is an old woman with a red hat that doesn't quite match and doesn't suit her, and she'll spend her pension on brandy and summer gloves, and she will sit down in the middle of the sidewalk when she gets tired because she doesn't care what anybody else thinks. People in the second half of life move around in an unself-conscious freedom. Unself-conscious freedom. They are less egocentric and more soul-centric. They're able to listen to the quiet voice of the true self and less to the loud, clangy voice of the ego. They have let go of the need to try to change their children or to try to change anyone else. But it turns out, ironically, that they become even more influential. Not because they are bullying and nagging other people, but by the sheer power of their integrity. They also tend to generate life and exude a kind of radiant energy, which is surprising because we often think of the later years as a time of winding down. But spiritual energy doesn't follow the laws of physics. And so when you meet a vibrant person in the second half of life, you feel energy radiating from them. Another ironic thing about this time of life is that as your soul is growing and as you're able to accept more and more kinds of diverse ideas and diverse people, the less you find that you fit in to old groups. So those golf buddies that you've been playing with for 30 years, all of a sudden, you don't feel like you fit in anymore. Because even though they're 60 and 70, they're still on the first half agenda of life, still talking about the big toys and the bigger houses and my golf club is bigger than your golf club. And you want to talk about growing your soul. You want to talk about transcendence. As your soul grows out, you're better able to hold conflicting emotions and conflicting ideas. You have long since let go of dualistic thinking, the either or, black and white, and you hold this both and feeling. And because you have lived enough years and experienced enough life, you know how to hold both incredible suffering and intense joy. This is a sign of spiritual maturity. The time will come, the poet says. The time will come. He says it with such conviction, such certainty, as if this level of awareness and consciousness is going to come to all of us. But the second half of life doesn't always come. Lots of people grow old and die without ever knowing there was a second half. And so what will cause us to turn away from the ego's preoccupation with looking good, defending our position, propping ourselves up? What will cause us to turn our attention to the second half? Well, we can read books. I recommend Richard Rohr, Falling Upward. We can listen to sermons, but that alone won't do it. Because the one thing the human ego doesn't want to do is change. Sometimes, in the quieter moments of life, we will hear that still small voice, and a feeling of dissatisfaction will come over us. When our souls and our minds are no longer satisfied with the superficial, the pretty, shiny baubles of life. What will cause us to turn toward the second half? When we start becoming very curious about ourselves, we wonder, why do I do that? Why do I think that? Where did that perception come from? What is it about this issue that just pushes my buttons? What are the true motivations for my actions? Why do I say things to those I love when I don't ever mean them? What causes us to turn toward the second half of life? There's a wonderful line in one of David White's poems where he says, "Arrange to grow tired of yourself." When you are at that point, when you are tired of your own foolishness, and I'm not talking about someone else's foolishness, but when you are tired of your own foolishness, then that's a good sign. Arrange to grow tired of yourself. When all of the achievements and material and even physical successes in the first half of life don't mean much to you anymore, then you know you're starting to turn. You know that feeling when you look around your life and you say, man, there's got to be more to life than this. There has got to be more. And you're right. That's your deep soul. That's your true self telling you, yes, there is something more. There's something more than money and influence and more gadgets. There is a more intense, intimate connection with all of life waiting for you. And so what will cause you to turn? What will cause you to turn toward the second half of life? In a word, suffering. When all the outside forces that are inevitable in life, divorce, death, disease, bankruptcy, addiction, we can go on with that list. When all those things come crashing into our carefully constructed life, then we have to do something. The first thing we do is try to grab on to the things that worked in the first half of our life. Our career, our job will save us, our fancy car will save us, money will save us, our youth will save us, our good looks. Our sheer physical strength will help us get through this. Our friends, our family, certainly our children will be there for us. And we grab onto those things, and they're gone. Many of those things are gone. And so, what do we reach out for? And that's the time when we realize, you know, the first half stuff, the first half tools, they're not going to help me now. My life is completely different. My life has completely changed. And so we have to find something else. Carl Jung reminds us in that chalice lighting, one cannot live the afternoon of life according to the program of life's morning. For what was great in the morning will be of little importance in the evening. And what in the morning was true will at evening have become a lie. It's like Odysseus. Maybe some of you remember this classic. that he spent his whole life as a seaman, you know, out on the boat, and his the symbol for that life, the first half of life, was an oar. But when he had to face the next chapter in his life, he had to give up that oar. He had to turn it into something else. And so what do you have to let go of? What do you have to let go of? I want to turn your attention back to the spiral. You know, Pat Winter is the artist who created this. The more I think about it, and the more years I live with a spiral, the deeper its meaning becomes. So in addition to the movement and the outward growth, the other thing about this spiral is that nothing is lost in it. Look at the center. The center is still there. Where we started is still there. And so the first half of life isn't something that you jettison. It's not something that you throw away. The ego isn't something you kill off in order to have a second life. You just get better at knowing the difference between the voice of your ego and the voice of your true self. You get better at saying no when the ego wants you to do something unhealthy and unhelpful. You say no when it wants to run the show. But it's still there. It's still there. The second half is not about abandoning the first half of your life. It's about growing out. It's about growing a soul that is going to be big enough to embrace everything and to integrate it into a fuller life. In the second half of life, all that you have ever avoided comes back as a true friend and teacher. And the time will come when you will greet yourself arriving, and each will smile at the other and say, sit. Sit here. Eat. Feast on your life. May it be so.